Good morning. So the bad news is you will have to cope with a French accent for the next 30 minutes now. Yeah. So I'm going to start with a quick update on the ministry, and first a quicker update on the family. It's coming. So it will be a little bit boring for those who don't know us, but we'll try to do it quickly. So this is a picture we took 2 weeks ago when Marina, who is here, came from the States to visit us in Paris. So she spent 3-4 days in Paris with Dimitri, her husband. And so they took this picture. So from right to left, this is here, this is Jeremy and her wife, Zhao. She's from Hanoi in Vietnam. This is me. This is Odile, if you remember. After you have Joanne, our oldest daughter, with her husband Jimmy, and our first grandson, Mahel. You have Raphael here, and you have Roman here. And the next picture, this is the last 4 events of the Bezins family. So on our first grandson, you know him by now. And on upper right and lower left, upper right is the baptism of Romain in our church, and here is the baptism of Raphael. This was this year in March. And below is the wedding of Jeremy in Hanoi with Zhao's parents. So that's it for the family update. So we'll talk a little bit about the Geneva Bible Society. So the first mission of the Geneva Bible Society is to translate, to publish, and to distribute the Bible. And we do that in 3 languages because we are a Swiss mission. So we do that in French, in German, and in Italian. And you see on this map the countries where we speak French. This is in pink. You have Germany in yellow, and you have Italy in green. And so we do all sorts of Bibles. We do study Bibles. We do all format of Bibles, obviously. We do audio Bibles, and now we do digital Bibles. And but one ministry that we started a few years ago, something like 5-6 years ago, is what we call the low-cost Bible. And we started with French, we did Italian, and we do German also. This is Bible which costs less than $2. And it has been really a new ministry for us in Europe because we were used to sell something like 8,000 Bible a month. And now, as you see with those Bible, we do more than 50,000 Bible a month. And all those Bibles are going to, obviously, they are going to churches, I mean, for young people, it's easy to buy a Bible now and then to lose it and to buy another one. But most of those Bibles are going to people who don't know the Bible. We are able to distribute those Bibles in supermarkets. You know, in Europe, it's not like in the States. You don't find usually Bible in a supermarket. So that was really new for France and for Europe, to find those Bibles so easily. And since more than 5 years now, every month we ship some 50,000 plus Bibles in Europe, in Africa, so in French, Italian, and German-speaking countries. So it's really a new ministry which and we are very thankful for this ministry, for all those Bibles, and we pray for the people who discover the gospel through those Bibles. The next slide. So another part of the ministry is bookstores, Christian bookstores. Just like I said, you don't find Bibles in supermarket and so on. You find Bibles on Amazon.com, but it's in general bookstores. You may find some Catholic Bibles, but I mean you have to ask for. It's not very visible. And so Christian bookstores is really an important ministry in Europe. And so that's something the Geneva Bible Society wants to support. So we have inside the mission we have 6 bookstores, but what we have been developing in the past years is to help the independent bookstores also to survive. And most of independent bookstores are managed by volunteers in Europe, and so they need help to get some professional tools to manage the bookstores, and that's what we have been doing in the past years. And you see today we have a network of 24 bookstores that we are helping to survive. And so we do that on system, we do that on marketing, we do that on catalog and so on. And right now we are trying to develop a website, because to get more visibility, that we can share with all those bookstores. So that's the second big part of our ministry. And below, I just put the big challenges for the bookstores. In big cities, this is a renting cost, which is very high. And bookstores are low margin business, and generally in the red. But so that's the big challenge. In other parts of the country, it's easier. And another challenge is to get enough volunteers to run the bookstores. And obviously the last one is a move toward digital books, which is something, a huge opportunity to spread the gospel, but also it is an additional challenge to keep those bookstores open, to keep those witnesses of the gospel inside the city. And the next slide. Yeah, that's just a sample of the books we are doing, mostly on to help to study the Bible. And obviously now we do all books in e-books at the same time, and we do also a lot of print on demand. I don't know if you are familiar with that. It's a way to print the book when it is ordered by the customer. So it's a way to never have any out of print, because when books don't sell enough, we move them to print on demand, and it's always available that way. And then last one. Yeah, that's also something we started some years ago. Generally the people who have the money to buy Bibles are not the same that the people who have the energy to spread the Bibles. And so because we are not a non-profit organization, we are able to receive a tax deductible gift. And so people who have some money in Europe give that money, we buy Bibles, and we distribute Bibles to youth groups who are distributing those Bibles everywhere in the street, on the beach during the summertime and so on. And the only thing we ask those youth groups is to give us a report that we publish, and to show the people who give money that their money is properly used to distribute the Bible. And it's a kind of virtuous circle where people who have some money can help people who want to distribute the Bible to do so in Europe, and particularly in France. So that's it for the update about the Geneva Bible Society. If you have any question, I will be pleased to answer after this meeting. So now I would like to share a little bit about the gospel with you. And so we are going to read in the four gospels. It will be in if you have four fingers, you can put one in Matthew 26, one in Mark 14, one in Luke 22, and one in John 18. So you will be able to follow the readings. because we will move from one to the other to follow the story we are sharing this morning. And the question I would like to share with you this morning is, what does it mean to walk in the first and most important commandment of the Lord? You know, it's you must love the Lord, your God, with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. That's what Jesus reminds us in Matthew 22:37. So if it is the first and most important commandment, it must be quite important to know if we love God with all our heart and all our soul and all our mind. And the answer to this question has been a very painful teaching for Peter, the Apostle Peter. And what I suggest is we follow him through the gospel and try to learn from his experience. And as we read in the gospel, Freddy has accepted to read the Bible text for me. So at least you will rest a little bit when you will be reading. So this terrible experience of Peter began, as you know, at the betrayal of Peter shortly before the Lord's crucifixion. And it concluded when the relationship was restored with the Lord some days after the resurrection. So this story starts just after Jesus took the first supper, the bread and the cup, with his disciples. And when this small group has just left their house in Jerusalem, and they are going to a garden called Gethsemane. And the Lord speaks to Peter, who is also called Simon, as you know. So we are going to read now from Luke 22, verse 31 to 34.
Luke 22. Simon, Simon, Satan has asked to sift each of you like wheat. But I have pleaded in prayer for you, Simon, that your faith should not fail. So when you have repented and turned to me again, strengthen your brothers. Peter said, Lord, I am ready to go to prison with you and even to die with you. But Jesus said, Peter, let me tell you something. Before the rooster crows tomorrow morning, you will deny me three times that you even know me.
So after this, Jesus goes with his disciples to the Garden of Gethsemane. And then Judah came with soldiers and temple guards to arrest Jesus. Now we read in John 18, verse 10 and 11.
Then Simon Peter drew a sword and slashed off the right ear of Malchus, the high priest's slave. But Jesus said to Peter, put your sword back into its sheath. Shall I not drink from the cup of suffering the Father has given me?
And the same story, we find it in Matthew 26, verse 52 to 54.
Put away your sword, Jesus told him. Those who use the sword will die by the sword. Don't you realize that I could ask my Father for thousands of angels to protect us, and he would send them instantly? But if I did, how would the scriptures be fulfilled that describe what must happen now?
And we continue back in John 18, verse 12 and 13.
So the soldiers, their commanding officer, and the temple guards arrested Jesus and tied him up. First they took him to Annas, the father-in-law of Caiaphas, the high priest at that time.
And we follow in Mark 14, and it's a long passage from verse 54 to 72. And we'll skip some verses.
Meanwhile, Peter followed him at a distance and went right into the high priest's courtyard. There he sat with the guards, warming himself by the fire. Verse 61, but Jesus was silent and made no reply. Then the high priest asked him, "Are you the Messiah, the Son of the Blessed One?" Jesus said, "I am. And you will see the Son of Man seated in the place of power at God's right hand and coming on the clouds of heaven." Then the high priest tore his clothing to show his horror and said, "Why do we need other witnesses? You have all heard this blasphemy. What is your verdict?" "Guilty," they all cried. "He deserves to die." Then some of them began to spit at him, and they blindfolded him and beat him with their fists. "Prophesy to us," they jeered, and the guards slapped him as they took him away. Verse 66. Meanwhile, Peter was in the courtyard below. One of the servant girls who worked for the high priest came by and noticed Peter warming himself at the fire. She looked at him closely and said, "You are one of those with Jesus of Nazareth." But Peter denied it. "I don't know what you're talking about," he said, and he went out into the entryway. Just then, a rooster crowed. When the servant girl saw him standing there, she began telling the others, "This man is definitely one of them." But Peter denied it again. A little later, some of the other bystanders confronted Peter and said, "You must be one of them, because you are a Galilean." Peter swore, "A curse on me if I'm lying. I don't know this man you're talking about." And immediately the rooster crowed the second time.
And we finish this part of the story in Luke 22, verse 61 and 62.
At that moment, the Lord turned and looked at Peter. Suddenly, the Lord's words flashed through Peter's mind. "Before the rooster crows tomorrow morning, you will deny three times that you even know me." And Peter left the courtyard, weeping bitterly.
So following this sad story, the Lord Jesus continues his spiritual struggle against evil and against death. It is a battle which culminates at the cross, in the divine tearing between the Lord dying on the cross and God his Father. And the Bible tells us that God was both absent and very present during this battle. We read in Matthew 27:46, Jesus called out with a loud voice, "My God, my God, why have you abandoned me?" And we can read also in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 19, Paul explained there that during this terrible moment, God was in Christ, reconciling the world to himself in a perfect act of righteousness. So at the cross, death is defeated. Jesus raised, and he found his disciples before returning to God. And the Bible tells us that the Lord appeared to Peter just after the resurrection, but we don't have much detail about it. And the last part of our story, we find it, it's about 60 miles up north of Jerusalem on the seaside of Galilee. And we are going to read it in John 21, verse 15 to 19.
After breakfast, Jesus asked Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" "Yes, Lord," Peter replied, "you know I love you." "Then feed my lambs," Jesus told him. Jesus repeated the question, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" "Yes, Lord," Peter said, "you know I love you." "Then take care of my sheep," Jesus said. A third time, he asked him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter was hurt that Jesus asked the question a third time. He said, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." Jesus said, "Then feed my sheep. I tell you the truth, when you were young, you were able to do as you liked. You dressed yourself and went wherever you wanted to go. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands, and others will dress you and take you where you don't want to go. Jesus said, "This is to let him know." Jesus said this to let him know by what kind of death he would glorify God. Then Jesus told him, "Follow me."
So we have followed Peter all through this difficult experience for him. And Peter is a very touching character in the Bible, because we find in him a lot of our weaknesses. And at the same time, Peter is the one who brought Christianity among Jews, as well as among other nations. And in the Bible, Peter doesn't hide the difficulties he met. We read the changes he went through in his life and in his heart to be able to walk in the footsteps of Jesus. So Peter helps us to understand how far we can serve the Lord if we accept to be corrected and transformed by Jesus. So let's go look back at our story. At the beginning of our reading, Peter is in the Garden of Gethsemane. It is in Luke 22, before the arrest of Jesus. And this Peter is not the same than the one we have on the seaside of Galilee after the resurrection of Jesus Christ in John 21. In Luke 22, in the Garden of Gethsemane, we read that Peter is really genuinely ready to die for Jesus. And at the end of our story in John 21, on the seaside of Galilee, Jesus tells Peter that he would die one day because of faithfulness to the Lord. And when he listened to that, Peter doesn't show any emotion, even so it's not something easy to hear. And we know that Peter has very well understood what the Lord told him at that time, because he talked about that in his second letter in 2 Peter 1:14. So at the beginning of our story, as well at the end of our story, we see Peter, who loves the Lord and who is willing to die for him. Yet between those two Peters, there is a complete change. Strictly speaking, it is a drastic transformation. This is a meaning given by Jesus in Luke 22:32 that we read before, when Jesus said, "When you have turned to me again." And in Greek, it is quite a strong verb, which talk about a complete recovery, a deep transformation, almost a conversion. And this drastic change, it is a change that clearly the Peter in Gethsemane did not suspect he will have to do. And so he will go through this transformation in a terrible ordeal. That's what we read, because he will betray the one for whom he believed he was ready to die. Now, if I look at myself, I can tell you that I love the Lord with all my heart and all my soul. Yes, of course. But do I love the Lord like Peter in Gethsemane? Or do I love the Lord like Peter in Galilee? And it's not me who knows the difference. It is the Lord who appreciates. If I love him like Peter in Gethsemane, I could be playing into the hands of the devil. That's what we read in John 18 and in Matthew 26. The zeal of Peter to defend his Lord is contradicting the plan of salvation. So this is quite important to understand the difference. So the only way to know whether we love Jesus as Peter did in the Garden of Gethsemane, or as Peter did on the seaside of Galilee, The only way to know is to ask the Lord himself. So this is in our deepest intimacy with the Lord that we may understand if our love for him is the love he expects from us. Because as we see here in Peter's story, loving Christ, defending Christ, may lead us to contest with him. And we read that the Lord doesn't need us to be defended. That's what he told Peter in Matthew 26. So what we see in this story is that nobody but the Lord can teach me how to love like Peter in Galilee. Again, Peter is very authentic, both in Gethsemane and in Galilee. So where is the difference? Does Peter more love Jesus in Galilee than he loved him in Gethsemane? I don't know. But Peter has learned two things through this terrible experience. The first thing he learned is that by himself, his commitment to the Lord did not stand very long. Or even worse, left alone, he may fall under the influence of Satan. Once again, in Gethsemane, Peter loved his Lord. But his love did not come from the Lord. His love was from his own convictions, his beliefs, and his emotions. And all this did not resist to a horrible day when things did not turn out as he thought. And in Galilee, Peter expressed a very different love when he said, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." His deep feelings and his convictions are now under the gaze of his Lord. And if his commitment should lead Peter to the ultimate sacrifice, it will not be by bravery anymore, it will be just by faith and loyalty. So I think we can say that in Gethsemane, Peter was putting his convictions above his own life. And in Galilee, he has now learned to place the gaze of the Lord above his convictions. And this change was not because of the will of Peter, but because of the teaching and because of the love of Jesus. And what happens to Peter happens to me, happens to every one of us. The Lord knows our weaknesses, but also Satan. And we see at Gethsemane, we see Satan seizing Peter. And Satan will try to seize us when we put our confidence in ourselves rather than in the Lord. But we know one thing. We know that Jesus is praying for each one of us as he was praying for Peter. In Luke 22, we read, "I have pleaded in prayer for you, Peter, that your faith should not fail." And probably Satan was pleased to see Peter betraying his Lord, just like he is pleased when he sees our weaknesses so often. But there is something that Satan always forgets. It is that the Lord will never permit that our attitude goes further than necessary for our spiritual learning. Again, Jesus himself is praying that our faith should not fail. And in his grace, the Lord wants to lead each one of us to discover the true love of God, the one he has for us, and the one he expects from us. This is the second lesson in this story. So let's look a little bit more closely to Jesus now. So the beginning of our reading started just a few minutes before the Lord was arrested, just a few hours before the crucifixion, a few hours before he offered himself to the judgment of God, where he took my place, where he took your place, where he took the place of every man and every woman on earth. So this is just a few hours before being abandoned by God. And this is an agony that we might just start to really apprehend when we will be in heaven. And I'm not even sure about that. So a few hours before this event, as much unique as it was terrible, a few hours before entering into this cataclysm for the sake of God's perfect righteousness and God's love to every human being, at this moment, Jesus knew. He knew in the middle of this battle that one of his most faithful disciples is going to betray him. And Jesus could very well either neutralize Peter or just ignore him. But in this dreadful and historic moment, Jesus takes his time for Peter. He warns him and he prays for him. The love of Jesus for Peter goes so much beyond any human or any tactical consideration. As I said, Jesus is going toward a physical and spiritual torture. But it is Jesus who cares and prays for Peter. And it is Peter who slips away and betrays. In the middle of Peter's denial, the Lord thinks about his friend and keeps a gaze at him. That's what we read in Luke 22:61. Jesus is being accused, he is beaten, they spit at him. The death is deploying all its strength to defeat him. In the midst of this terrible fight, Jesus thinks about Peter. I think Jesus thought about each one of us too. I think Jesus, when he was loaded with my sins and my own betrayals in the battle against death, I think he was thinking about the sinner he was saving from eternal death. And some days after his resurrection on the seaside of Galilee, knowing the heart of Peter, it is Jesus again who works to restore the lost fellowship. So this story shows us that when our attitude takes us away from God, Jesus, him, never goes away from us. He is watching over us. He is praying for each one of us that we discover how deep is his love for us and how much he desires our love in return. As John said in his first letter, we love God because he loved us first. So the only way to walk in the most important commandment, the only way to love the Lord our God with all our heart, all our soul, and all our mind, is to greatly experiment his love for us. Thank you.